Some call it a face race. Doctors are competing to be the first to perform a face transplant, taking facial tissue from a recently deceased donor and transferring it to a living person. And researchers at the Cleveland Clinic in Ohio have cleared the first hurdle. NPR's Patricia Naiman has this report.
It might sound like science fiction or celluloid fantasy, maybe even a very extreme makeover. But the doctors who want to transplant faces say this is a real hope for people who've had their face disfigured by cancer, accident, or fire.
We are not really talking about someone who is a little unhappy with their appearance.
Surgeon Maria Siermanoff directs plastic surgery research at the Cleveland Clinic. Her research team applied and received approval from the hospital's Institutional Review Board to begin the search for patients who want to undergo face transplant.
Those are the patients who were already going through at least 30 or more reconstructive procedures.
Gwendolyn Arrington called the Cleveland Clinic as soon as she read about the possibility of transplant in the local paper. Like many patients who've quietly expressed interest, Arrington dreams of one day walking into a room and not being noticed.
I remember a toddler in a shopping cart one day saying, "Mommy, see the monster, see the monster."
Arrington's story began 15 years ago with a gas leak in her house.
I was coming home from work, and I knew my husband was in the house asleep because of the shift he was working. So normally I would not have gone in, but by smelling the gas outside, I went in the house, and then I tried to wake him up.
But she couldn't wake him up. She struggled, and then she saw a big blue ball of fire coming toward her. The air, she says, was on fire. She tried to get downstairs. She tried three times. Each time, the fire pushed her back up the stairs. She says it felt like a really strong man pushing her with all his might.
And the third time that it felt like I was pushed down, I literally had given up, and I had said, "Oh, my God, I'm going to die." And then I saw a flash of my daughter's face in front of me. And I said, "God, I can't go now." And once I said that, I was able to get up and walk down the stairs.
Down the stairs and through the fire. Arrington didn't know it at the time, but she had third-degree burns over a quarter of her body. Many of her fingers were like black charred sticks. Her burns were so severe she went into shock and felt no pain. Her only concern was to get help to get her husband out of the house.
I remember, just asking someone to help, and they were just looking at me, and I remember the facial expressions, but I didn't connect it to my appearance because I didn't feel any pain.
A neighbor obviously saw her burns and tried to help by pouring a bowl of ice water over her. Her husband eventually got out. Finally, firefighters and an ambulance arrived. The following weeks were a blur. Arrington's husband recovered, but she was unconscious much of the time. But she does remember the first time she was able to get out of bed and walk into the bathroom.
And actually seeing the mirror, and I literally screamed. There used to be a cartoon character. I don't know what the cartoon character's name, but it was like an African cartoon character. He had a ponytail, big lips, and like a bone through his nose or something. And that's what I envisioned of myself. And I literally screamed.
Arrington shyly admits that before the fire, she thought she was pretty. Not glamorous or anything, she says. Light brown skin, eyes a little slanted, full lips. She can safely say pretty. But 2 months after the fire, her face was a patchwork of dark colors and different textures. Skin grafts had been taken from her back, thighs, and stomach. The seams where they were sewn together deepened into crevices. The scar tissue constricted, making it difficult to smile or move her head. Her top lip was gone. So were pieces of both nostrils. Her ears were mostly burned away. On her right hand, the tips of four fingers had to be amputated. On her left hand, entire digits were gone. And when she finally came home from the hospital, the awful, poignant reality set in. Her 2-year-old daughter didn't know who she was.
I remember her being afraid to be in the same room with me. She would actually scream and cry. And I remember my father, and he meant the best. He really did. But he's explaining, "That's your mother. Go over and give her a kiss." that's your mother. And she's screaming. She's horrified. And I remember one day, and I was sitting in the kitchen, and she came in the kitchen, and she got on the other side of the table, and she had climbed up with a picture of me when I was 14. And she said, "See, this is my mommy. My mommy's in the hospital. You're not my mommy."
Today, 15 years after the fire, Arrington has learned to cope. She no longer hides in the house or in the back seat of the car. She returned to school, got her BA. She works for an insurance company. She has two more children, and the two-year-old who didn't recognize her is now 17. Arrington lost count, but estimates she's had over 50 reconstructive surgeries. Surgeries to rebuild her nose, her lips, her ears, and later, procedures to smooth over the seams of the skin grafts. Even so, she says, people always look. Some just stare. And children, she says, are still often frightened. That's why when she saw the article about the Cleveland Clinic's research into face transplants, she wanted to know more.
I did want the opportunity to just have like a quote-unquote normal face, where it didn't have all the seams and it wasn't quite as dark. And if I wanted to be anonymous, you know, I just wanted to blend in the crowd, that I could just blend in. As far as the emotional pain that I may encounter when I hear different things from people that may hurt, I figured that was a lot of it that could be removed. And, you know, just, I guess just that sense of wanting to look somewhat normal.
Just look at the samples under the microscope.
At the Cleveland Clinic Laboratories, Dr. Maria Sirmanoff is enthusiastic about the possibility that face transplants could help people like Arrington. Existing treatments like skin grafts from elsewhere on the body are nearly impossible to turn into natural-looking noses and mouths. Sirmanoff says that's because facial skin is unique.
The facial skin is stretchable, it's pliable, it has subcutaneous tissue, which is also giving its specific appearance. It has a special thickness, and it is the most important, stretchable, so it's allowing for the movement of underlying muscles of expression, which there is no other skin tissue in our body which will permit that.
During actual face transplant surgery, the full surface of a dead donor's face would be cut along the hairline, down the cheeks in front of the ears, and along the jawline. At the same time, a similar procedure would be done on the recipient. Then the donor skin, along with the underlying fat tissue, would be placed over the face bones and muscle of the recipient. Then, Dr. Sirmanoff says,
we need to attach the arteries and the veins. Arteries are bringing blood to the facial skin, and veins are getting rid of the bad blood from the skin, so they are draining the skin.
The surgery is complicated and delicate and could take up to 12 hours. And because skin is part of the body's immune system, the chance of rejection is higher than other transplants. In the case of faces, it could be up to 50%. That's why Sirmanoff's lab is trying to develop more effective medications to allow the body to accept another person's skin. But that's also why some people are opposed to face transplant.
Often in medicine, I think you'll hear the phrase, we can, but should we?
Eric Trump is a medical ethicist with the Hastings Center in New York.
I think that's a very good example here, that we have the capability, the technological capability to transplant a face, but it's not clear, given the risks and the benefits, that we should.
And the biggest risk, says Trump, is rejection.
If the face goes into rejection, that will mean the face will have to be removed. So the scenario would be someone losing a face twice, you know, first in the accident or through cancer or whatever the cause of the initial loss was, and then again you would have to remove the face, and there would be probably more scarring than before.
And even if the transplant is successful, patients still have to take costly anti-rejection medication for the rest of their lives, medication that can have severe side effects. Trump says those side effects, along with the likelihood of rejection, make face transplant a questionable solution for patients and an ethical dilemma for doctors. Trump also says families would likely hesitate to donate a loved one's face, fearing they might actually see that face somewhere on the street or in a mall later on. And that could reduce organ donation, he says, at a time when organs are already in short supply. Proponents of face transplant, like surgeon John Barker at the University of Louisville, say they appreciate these arguments, but they say the potential benefit for patients who want them is immeasurable. Barker's research team is experimenting with cadavers, taking facial skin from one cadaver and putting it on the bony structure of another.
What they look like is a combination of the donor and the recipient, because you've got the scaffolding or the bony structure of the recipient with the soft tissue and the mask structure of the donor. So it looks like a combination.
Sort of a third face. When it comes to rejection, Barker says his team has been very conscientious in defining guidelines for the first transplant recipient. They plan to choose a patient who is just 1 year out from their accident.
So that person, what do they have ahead of them? They have 20 years of reconstruction, over 100 surgeries. That's what they would have in front of them without the face transplant. So in the event it fails and we have to remove it, we just revert back to the conventional treatments. And so they're back at square one, but square one is pretty close to where they were when we started, as opposed to taking one of these people who has had 20 years of reconstruction, who has already paid the price of 100 operations. And if that person goes back to square one, it's a different situation.
Barker's research team is still waiting for permission from the University of Louisville to begin face transplants. And while Louisville may exclude patients like Gwendolyn Arrington, who's already had dozens of reconstructive surgeries, it's not clear the Cleveland Clinic would also exclude her. And so far, the Cleveland Clinic is the only institution in this country that has approval to begin face transplant. The clinic plans to screen potential recipients thoroughly. They'll match gender and race. They say it might be harder to find the donor, but when they do, they say, they'll be ready. Patricia Namond, NPR News.